Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today's author has quite a varied past, and for me, it's always fascinating to take a look to learn how life often leads to writing. She is Tracy Dahan. Tracy writes the Agnes Lutti mystery series set in Switzerland. Prior to writing fiction, she began her career in the practice of architecture, using the need to see great buildings as an excuse to travel. After several years in Switzerland and receiving an advanced degree in European history, she turned her hand to the nonprofit world, eventually running alumni relations for a West Coast university. And then, having left the real world to pursue a writing career, she now lives with her husband and Jack Russell Terriers and Flemish giant rabbit in Southwest Virginia. There they have a marvelous deep porch where limitless cups of Lady Grey tea can be enjoyed while the next book is plotted. She loves reading and travel and cooking and is an occasional amateur painter. And today we are going to learn more about her mysteries, which were inspired by her years living in Switzerland. So let's get going. Welcome to the network, Tracy.
Thank you, Pat. And thank you for that great introduction. And I will say it's a segue into kind of a way I felt like maybe the police were going to visit my house one time. You mentioned my Flemish giant rabbit. Well, she has passed on, and I received the news. Of course, it always happens to someone taking care of your pet, right? Their worst nightmare. So I am at a mystery conference in Toronto, Canada, and I'm seated next to some friends at a dinner. The man next to me is a great writer. He's a former homicide detective. And I get this text, and, you know, you can tell from the tone of the text kind of what it is. And I call, and he can hear kind of part of my conversation. And my part of the conversation runs something like this. No, I understand that she's dead. Yes. That would be great if you could bury her right now. I know it's late. And, yes, we have a place where we buried her brother. And it's in the darkest part of the yard. There's no light back there, but it's where the ground is soft. I mean, this conversation went on. And I hang up. He's like, so do I need to call the FBI? I said, no, it's our rabbit. And she did have a brother who had passed away, and we had buried him in the yard. But I think my half of the conversation really sounded like I needed to be reported.
It sounded like fodder for a mystery.
It did. Well, because I even said things like, and the joke was, of course there's no headstone because that's exactly how they find the bodies buried in your yard, you know. It was exactly fodder for a mystery, yes. Thank goodness not for a real life crime, you know, but for a fictional mystery.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was going to be my first question to you, Jack Russell's and a Flemish giant rabbit. I'm so sorry to hear that. It makes me sad.
Well, you know, the Jack Russells, we've always had pairs of Jack Russells. My husband's an architect. He's actually a Swiss architect. And the girl dogs are always with a Russian name, because I have a kind of love of certain aspects of European history. So we had Sabachka, which means little girl dog. Oh. And we have Laika, who was the first dog in space. Although we don't like to tell her about the end of that story.
No.
And then we've always had a boy and a girl. Our first boy was Rem, named after Rem Koolhaas, who's a famous architect. Currently we have Alvaro, named after Alvaro Siza, another Pritzker Prize winning architect. And the Flemish giant came with the house.
Oh.
When we moved to Virginia, the owners had Flemish giants, and they asked if we would take them because they didn't really have a place in their new home. And we said, sure, you know, it's no problem. They have a beautiful little outdoor house and all this kind of thing. I realized later they were raising them to eat, which is fine.
Oh, grief.
but, you know, not really something I was going to be doing. And so we had a real good feeling about the life we gave to our Flemish giants, and you know, they passed away in the last 3 years. So all's well that ends well, I guess. We enjoyed them while we had them.
Oh, I love that story, because it saved the rabbits on so many counts. They didn't have to move to a new location. And secondly, they weren't eaten. So
What's interesting is, I mean, I had no experience with rabbits. These are, Flemish Giants are big.
Yes.
And so ours are actually small Flemish Giants, and they were about 23 pounds each. That's a big rabbit.
That's a big rabbit.
Yes. And so since we didn't want them to breed, we had the boys fixed so that they could live together. And so the boy and the girl, and he actually, I didn't realize this about rabbits, but he had such, they both had great personalities. He was literally in love with her. He would cuddle up next to her. He was affectionate with her. They got along so well. And when he passed away, I thought, oh gosh, now she's alone. This is kind of depressing. No, she reorganized the house, kind of moved where she liked her straw, where she liked her hay, and was over it. Moved on.
Oh my, she thought the single life isn't so bad without this guy all over me,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Oh, I love this story. I love it. And I love your life. It sounds like you've had a very rich and exciting background. So maybe just give us a little peek, because I know it has impacted your writing.
It has. And it's funny when you hear someone list the things you've done, or if you see it written down in a resume, you think they don't seem very connected sometimes. Mm-hmm. And in your own mind, or at least in my mind, I see the interconnectivity, and I see how paths that kind of led naturally from one thing to the other. You know, I did study architecture and practice architecture for some years. That's how I met my husband. He's an architect. We first moved to Switzerland kind of in that period, or at the end of that period. Even in college, I thought about writing. But I'll be honest, I thought about writing, you know, I guess the best word to say is as a hobby. It was something I truly enjoyed. I felt like I couldn't not do it. But maybe I didn't have the confidence to say, well, I could be, quote, a writer. I could be published. For me, I just enjoyed it. And it really came out of a love of reading. And I was such a voracious reader. And I guess for many readers, writing is the next step. But it took 20 years for me to say, wait a minute. Maybe writing is what I want to do full time. Maybe I should really pursue this. And it actually took a good friend of mine to kind of push me over the edge.
So was there that aha moment? What was the catalyst then that really sent you to the point where you started writing?
Well, you know, it was interesting. My father, who was an ER doctor, and which was a very hardworking schedule, but for him a great schedule, because he would work, let's say, 4 days completely on and 5 days off, or, you know, five and four, something like that. So he, for the first time in his life, had several days where he didn't have any responsibilities. And he had this idea for a story. And he said, and I was in college, he said, do you want to help me write it? So when my dad said, do you want to help me write it? I thought, that sounds intriguing. And also, you're paying my tuition bills. Of course, I want to help you write it. But all kidding aside, I'd always had that love of reading, which had made me think about my own stories. When you're reading a book, you in the downtime, think, what would I write? What's a story that I would create? My father had this idea, and it was a real educational experience. We looked at a lot of books. We diagrammed books. We did a lot of research for the story. We developed character profiles. It was almost like taking a self-taught graduate class. And that's what we loved about it. We loved the writing. So the interesting thing is, he, of course, was busy at work. I was busy in school. Went on the next year, and we never thought, hey, we should see about getting it published. We did another book, same thing. These were thrillers. This is in the 90s, early 90s. But we always stopped at the point of, it's a complete, finished book. Wow, don't we feel great? We're done. I don't know. Maybe we just didn't feel like, oh, we are real writers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because we're so busy in our, quote, real lives that we didn't take that next step. So anyway, I got hooked. And I moved to Europe a few years later, where I really was able to spend a little bit more time writing. But in between, I kept coming up with story ideas. And I will say, kind of in my own, you know, little pat myself on the back, I was pretty good about, you know, you're always mulling ideas over. I was pretty good about saying, I'm going to sit down and write that, and finishing it. And I think eventually that really helped me, because I didn't feel that it was something that I kind of started and, you know, would write a few paragraphs or write a chapter or write 30 pages and then not feel like I ever got anywhere with it. I always tried to finish it. And I tried my hand at several different types of books. I mean, romance novels, you name it. Really as a way, not consciously of experimenting, but as a way of, in a way, experimenting, mm-hmm. but without a thoughtful, this is what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But saying, I wonder if I could write something like that. What would my story be? And then finishing it. But never necessarily feeling like it was the one that I wanted to see published, like to the point that I would do something about it. Mm-hmm.
Now, as you're talking about your dad and working with your dad, I'm thinking, wow, how lovely was that to be able to spend that intense, close time with your father? And so what happened to those stories? Are they still around? Can they be resurrected?
Well, you know, we do, of course, still have them. You know, it's always tricky because I actually do think that they were both very solid books. Yeah, I will tell you one confession. One of them is really long. I think it's like 175,000 words. It may even be 200,000 words. And so knowing what I know now, no one is ever going to publish a first novel. It's 200,000 words. You know, I use the word no one, knowing you can always point out an exception. So technically the books are probably too long to be published. I'm also afraid that they fit a time. They were a little bit of the thriller time period of Tom Clancy, when Tom Clancy was really reinventing a new genre. Mm-hmm. And so they're not necessarily military thrillers like his were, but they were in that vein a little bit. And so I sometimes feel like you write things, and while they may have been, you know, possibly good enough to have been published at that moment, mm-hmm. maybe their moment isn't right at this moment right. again.
No, I get it.
So, you know, on the one hand, I'm very proud of them. I think they're really good books. Would I feel confident saying, oh my gosh, we could send them to my publisher today and see if they want to give it a go? No. And also because of the technology involved. They were actually incredibly well researched, and they did involve very current technology. Actually, some of the things, the second book we worked on had a plot that had to deal with an American president who, you know, spoiler alert here, turned out to kind of go down the dark side a little bit. Involved holograms and very sophisticated use of holograms, involved a very strange relationship with the Chinese government, and also a widespread flu epidemic. And so some of these things, I read them and I think, oh, that could be today. Wouldn't need to tweak it much. But at the same time, I do think they were of a period. And also, when I started to get published, you do have to kind of say, who am I going to be? Mm-hmm. Who am I going to spend my time right. as in terms of an author? And the mystery genre was one that really appealed to me right now.
No, I get that. I get that. I was just curious. Let's talk about your two books, Swiss Vendetta and A Well-Timed Murder. Tell us a bit about those. Swiss Vendetta was the first one, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's the start of the Agnes Lutie mystery. My husband is Swiss, and of course he grew up there, and then we lived there for some years. And every time I'm there, I think Switzerland, I mean, every place is unique in some way. But so many people have heard of Switzerland. So many people can name things that they associate with Switzerland. And I thought maybe that would be fun. A lot of people in the, especially traditional mystery genre, write books set in England or the British Isles. And that was not really my thing, although I appreciate that. And I kind of know what draws people to that region. But Switzerland might be something a little bit different. And that might be that little hook that I would have. It also let me bring in some of the knowledge I gained while living there. I can go on and say a little bit about the two books.
Sure.
You know, the idea when you're thinking about writing a mystery series, usually you're thinking about a series. When you say, I want to write a mystery book, it's very rare that someone says you're going to do a standalone, a publisher's interested in a series. But I'm not someone who planned them out. I'm not someone who said, oh, book one, book two, book three, book four. I really wrote the first one as a standalone novel, and I hope people can enjoy it that way. You obviously hope to leave some things for the future, so I kept that in mind. I wanted to create a female detective who was not necessarily a superhero. I didn't want to have her able to, you know, read minds or, you know, be a math genius or, you know, some of the things that give you that advantage. I wanted her in some ways to be a normal person, who I think wants to be good at her job, who suffers from the ups and downs of life, whether it's family life or professional life. And I hope that that would bring a sense of humanity to her character. And I hope that that would be something that we could stay with and see her grow and see how she overcomes obstacles and see how she enjoys herself, more than focusing on kind of the superhero features or the anomalies. And so that's really what started the creation of my first character. And to be quite honest, I didn't even start with her as a character. I started with a place. And I think that in my books, place is always very important. And perhaps that comes from architecture. I think a background in architecture means that you look at something and you think of place first. And so I started with the idea of a chateau. And Chateau Valeton, which appears in both the books and will probably continue to play a little bit of a role. Chateau Valeton is based on Chateau Chillon, which is a very famous historic castle on the edge of Lac Léman, which is also known as Lake Geneva. And we also have friends who live in a Romanesque church on the edge of the lake that has wings have been added onto it, very extensive wings. And I thought of them living in that beautiful situation in this place that's very historic on the edge of the lake, kind of combining that idea with the historic Chateau Chillon. That was the beginning of Chateau Valeton, and I thought, well, someone's going to die here. It's a murder mystery. You know, who lived here? Why did they die? And that really is what started the idea for Swiss Vendetta, and that's where all the other characters sprang from.
So interesting. I like the thought that it came from a place first rather than a character, and then secondly, that you did try to make your character basically relatable.
Yeah, I think relatable is perhaps the right word to use. You know, every book is going to have its, I don't want to use the word eccentricities, but it's going to have its distinctive components. And I didn't want it to be about the just kind of over-the-top quirkiness of my main character. Part of that is because also in Switzerland, Switzerland is truly idyllic. It is literally perfect. And I emphasize that because that's one of its problems. To maintain that level of perfection is incredibly hard work. Now, you have the beauty of the landscape. People work hard at that. I mean, they work hard at maintaining it. They work hard at protecting it. But there's also a little bit of a human toll in the average person maintaining a kind of facade of perfection in their home life and their work life. There has been a history of very high suicide rates in Switzerland. Again, the human toll on maintaining this extreme sense of normalcy and perfection. And so I wanted to not get too far away from the reality of Switzerland and create, you know, kind of absurdly quirky characters and try to stick a little bit with this normalcy that pervades everything. And then you scratch a little bit beneath the surface and you see the effort that people are going to continue to project that.
Interesting. I did not know this about Switzerland, especially about the suicide rate or the reasons behind it.
Well, one of the Lausanne, Switzerland, which is the center for the books in some ways, even though they don't necessarily take place in the city of Lausanne. Lausanne is an amazingly beautiful town, very old town dating back to the Roman times, and it's set on a steep hill, and so there's beautiful views of the lake and old and new parts of the city. There are a lot of bridges in Lausanne to connect the actual city streets through these hills that go up and down. And so you almost forget that you're in a very hilly situation. You're walking on a street, and all of a sudden you look down and you realize you're on a bridge. The street has become a bridge right in the middle of town, and you're looking down 7 or 8 stories. There is one bridge there that, because it is so high and it's right in the center of town, is used for suicide, for jumpers. And so they keep a manned booth at the edge of the bridge in the holiday season in the kind of the dark winter months, hoping that that person can intercede and prevent people from taking that final act. So it shows how serious it is. They do take it seriously. But it is that kind of underbelly of this perfect society.
Mm-hmm. Very fascinating. I did not know this. I need to spend more time understanding this. And so then the second book, Well-Timed Murder, is that a sequel to it?
Yes, it is. It's interesting when you start a series and you're doing the second one, you're really setting yourself up for the timing of the novels. Are you doing one that ages every single year and you come back and find your character a year later? Or are you doing one that has a different time sequence? And with the second book, I decided to pick it up very quickly after the end of Swiss Vendetta. So it starts about 3 weeks after that book's conclusion. And again, I wanted her to still be recovering from, you know, I think we can assume that if you have a book and it's about a murder situation, your main character is going to be somehow emotionally involved in the solution and all this kind of thing. And I wanted us to see that. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to have read Swiss Vendetta to enjoy a well-timed murder, but if you have read it, I think you're going to feel a little bit of a reminder and say, oh, yeah, you know, I know that's why she's feeling or looking or viewing things this way, that she's only 3 weeks out of that other situation, that other very intense situation. I don't know that I would keep on a 3-week cycle for every book, but for me, for that first one, it just really felt like, let's keep going with where her mind is right now. I did a very different setting. My main character, Agnes, is based out of Lausanne, but the idea is that with a murder squad, you do have kind of a larger geographical distance that you might, especially in Switzerland, where there's not a gazillion murders. So the idea of taking some specialized people and sending them out. We start in the region of Lausanne and on the lake for the first book. The second book is going to take us to Basel. And there we're going to be at Baselworld, which is the world's foremost jewelry and watch show. And again, it's about place. So I knew that I wanted something about watches in the second book. When I went to Baselworld, I thought, this is it. This is the place that starts this book off. This is what anchors it. And we're going to see Basel. We're also going to see a boarding school in Switzerland, which is set out in the countryside. And that's a bit of an homage to my husband, who went to boarding school at 8, or really he was 9. He had just turned 9. And so I wanted to bring that part. I think, again, when people think of Switzerland, what do they think of? They think of chocolate and skiing. They think of watches. A lot of people think of boarding schools. It seems to be something very associated with that climate. And so I was trying to think of, again, these places and then how to weave them together in a story.
And is there a third coming up?
Let's hope so. I am working on it right now.
Are you?
Set in the region of Lausanne again, but also in Paris. I've spent a lot of time in Paris. I've lived there a little bit. And we go basically every year. And I wanted, if the second book is about the watch industry, I thought, what are we going to do in terms of place and in terms of topic for the third one? And so I thought Paris is a great place. But more importantly, the connection over the food industry. Switzerland has more Michelin-starred restaurants, like per capita, than anywhere else in the world. Part of it's because it's a very small country, it's a very wealthy country, and they can support that kind of expensive restaurant. But it also is about the mentality of the Swiss. There's a degree of perfectionism, like I mentioned, and there have been very sadly, in the last few years, some suicides. Famous chefs who maybe found out they weren't going to get a Michelin star, or they just couldn't deal with the pressure and society and how they kind of judge the restaurant business. And so I wanted to explore that a little bit more in the high-pressure world of top chefs. And then a chef in Switzerland, very natural to then have a second restaurant in Paris. You know, when you've achieved a certain amount of acclaim, to say, well, I want to go to another big capital and bring in those kind of international travelers. And again, the difference between the two types of restaurants, the kind of restaurant you started in your home country, the kind of glamour restaurant you might do in the French capital. And so I thought that was a great natural setting.
So it's very clear that your background plays a huge role in your writing.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I have traveled a lot. I've been very fortunate. And again, it comes back to place. And I think that place influences people perhaps more than we give credit mm-hmm. to. That may come a little bit out of traveling a lot and seeing people in different situations. And I think you can take the same person and drop them into a place and they will actually even behave differently. You know, send someone to say a luxury hotel in London for 2 weeks and their mannerisms may adapt to that situation. Mm-hmm. Send them to Tanzania and have them, help on an agricultural farm. They're probably going to start to resonate with the people they're working with. You're going to try to adapt some of their culture. Mm-hmm. People want to blend in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I kind of like that in the sense of place and how place influences how people behave and how they treat each other, what their expectations are. And anytime you have expectations, you can have disappointment of expectations and you can have the bad part that comes out of that. Mm-hmm.
I think this is very important that you brought this up today because we have a lot of authors, writers who do listen to these programs. And I just think the thought of thinking of place first and the impact that place would have upon a character might not be something people initially would think about first. It's usually the character.
Well, and for me, like I said, really the first book was about the place mm-hmm. and the characters came out of that. Mm-hmm. And perhaps because of that, as I think about other books, and I do keep notes and say, oh, this could be a great topic or this could be a great place. It's a little bit because I find that you are not necessarily starting with a plot that you drop into something, but you can maybe let yourself be influenced.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to teach a class on, or a seminar on plotting in the near future. And one of the things that I think we want to make clear is that you've really got to understand your story, kind of the big story questions. What is the story about? And then you can say, who do I need to tell that story? Do I need a milkman? Do I need a pilot because he, crisscrosses the globe? Do I need a bunch of women sitting at home knitting? Do I need a bunch of men sitting at home knitting? Mm-hmm. Do I need a farmer? Do I need a CIA expert? And you start to populate what, you know, who needs to have information to help me tell that story? Okay, then where are they? So that all the things come before you actually know maybe your plot. You've got to know the big story idea, and then the scenes come into play, you know, what we would call the plot. So I think people can get held up if they think they know their plot without understanding the piece that's going to set up what the story is, if that makes any sense. And so for me, you know, place works as my genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And then for me, it's a great way to say, you know, let's face it, it's a mystery series, probably always going to be about a murder at some point. It could be a theft and a murder. It could be a kidnapping and a murder. But usually there is a murder and a murder in a mystery series. And so there could be blackmail and a murder. I mean, there's all sorts of things to go with it. But for me, it's about, okay, so the plot's going to be about a murder. Well, what else? And as I said, it could be about blackmail and murder, or kidnapping and murder, or whatever, hate and murder, revenge murder. But I think that to keep it fresh, I want to have it in a new setting so that people can say, that's interesting. I saw a different part of the country. I met different characters because of where it is. The book that's coming out in February, like I said, it's set in Basel as a city. It's also set at the boarding school. And a boarding school is a great way to bring together people from all over the world.
For sure.
My husband was at, you know, Swiss boarding school, and he technically came there from Vienna. His parents were living in Vienna at the time. There were kids there from America, from Africa, from all over Europe. So there again, you have your pool of characters, and you can use those characters to move the plot along. But it gave me a way to, you know, bring together people in a way that I needed, as opposed to maybe people who work together at a grocery store who probably all live there and have maybe lived there for multiple generations. It was a way place can bring together diversity that I needed.
Ah, this is a very refreshing conversation. Thank you. Now, you also blog, you say, with a lively group of people. Tell us a bit about your blog.
Well, Misdemeanors, at misdemeanors.com, we actually all share an agent. And she was the one who introduced us as a group of the women that she represents. And we were all at a similar point in launching our careers. Now, not exactly at the same point. Some people are now on, their third book is out, you know, and my second book is out. So I think we're all within about a 3-year launch date of each other. And I think that Paula knew that having colleagues in the industry is so important, and having colleagues that are fellow authors, because it is a lonely business in many ways. You know, you are probably sitting at home alone writing, and you need to communicate with people who are maybe at the same point and share the struggles. You know, I feel like I'm blocked. I feel like I've gone down the dark hole and I need to cut, you know, half my book. What, has this ever happened to anyone else? Did they have people go, oh yes, it happens to all of us. And then she said, well, why don't you all start sharing these things? Why don't you do a blog together? You know, that'd be fun. And it has been fantastic. We each take a week. We rotate through. There's 7 of us and we live all across the country. In fact, one of us, Michelle, was living in the Virgin Islands. She's not living there anymore right now, you know, because of what happened. But we literally are living from east to west coast, and then Michelle's back in the continental U.S. And we each take a week. We do a common question on Friday. But we get so much out of our interaction and staying kind of together every day, because we know that every single one of us is writing. Some of us have other full-time jobs and write on the side. A few of us write full-time. But it's wonderful to have that daily contact with someone. You think, yeah, they're going through exactly what I am right now. Oh, but look, they're going to their child's wedding. Or, oh, but look, they're finishing a new short story. Or, oh, but look, Kate's book was recently USA Today bestseller. So we can kind of celebrate together at the same time. And the nice thing is that other people can read it. Other people can, you know, maybe feel a little bit the sense of community. So it's been a great experience.
And that's Misdemeanors, M-I-S-S, yes? Misdemeanors?
That's correct.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Well, we have talked about quite a bit here, and I know there's a whole lot more, but before we begin to wrap up, I just want to make sure that we haven't missed anything that you wanted to talk about.
Something I do want to say is how much readers mean. And I think that we tend to not have the opportunity to express that as much as we would like to. When you write, you're alone, but you do feel like you're writing for yourself. You have to write for yourself. But every time I get an email from a reader, or when I go out to bookstores, I'm going on tour in February, and you see readers that come in, it is so meaningful. And the people who take the time to do reviews and do all that kind of thing, It is beyond, you really, as a writer, you don't want to say I can't put it into words, but you really can't put it into words what that means to you, because you can't be there with them when they are reading. And so it's nice to get that feedback or to feel that encouragement. So I do want to say that. I'm looking forward to the next book coming out. I am going to go out on tour in February, and that's always fun. You know, it's always fun to get out and see bookstores and see what people are reading and look at everything on the shelves. I hope people will follow me on my website. They can stay in touch with what I'm doing and where I'm going and what's up next.
Yay. Well, share that with us where folks can learn more about you and where they can purchase your books.
Well, my books are very wonderfully available basically everywhere. So if you have a favorite bookstore, they can order it for you if it's not on the shelf. You can go to Barnes & Noble, Amazon, independent books. You can go to my website and I'll have links to all of those. But technically, the books are basically available everywhere. I will say one of my best author moments was going through the Zurich airport and seeing the book, seeing Swiss Vendetta on the shelf of the bookstore at the Zurich airport. I was on a layover between flights and I literally almost passed out. It was such an exciting moment. They can come to my website, which is myname.com, so TracyDehan.com. It's a terrible name to spell. It's impossible, so I'll do that for you. It's TracyDehan.com. And again, there are links to my books, there's links to my blog and pictures and all sorts of other things.
Excellent. So I want to reiterate that it's Tracy Dehan. It's TracyDehan.com, TracyDehan.com. And before we head out then, just any final words that you'd like to leave us with?
Well, if you're looking for a book to keep you cold as we go into winter, pick up Swiss Vendetta. It's going into paperback. But really, just thanks again. It's been great joining you. It's always great sharing a few minutes with people who love books.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Tracy.
Thank you, Pat.